Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron, and Justin is out today at a training in the Los Angeles area. And he'll be back next week to tell us all about his adventures and what all and who all he got to meet and do in his field. So we're excited to hear from him next week. This week, however, we have a return of an exciting guest that we've had on the show with us before. This gentleman, a former executive with the Federal Bureau of Prisons and now part of the nation's probably best prison consulting firm, Federal Prison Authority, that we have with us today, Mr. Jose Santana. Welcome back.
Thank you, Bruce, for having me. It's a pleasure to be back.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Always a pleasure. And, you know, since you've last come on, and of course, I'm part of Federal Prison Authority myself. I'm not going to lie, I'm very interested in that and helped find Federal Prison Authority. So what's happened in since December, President Trump signed into law something called the First Step Act, and this has everybody very excited, particularly people that are already in federal prison or about to go into federal prison. And just like anything else that's new, when it transitions into a law, it's a process getting that law enacted. And man, I tell you, I know we've been getting phone calls and you've been getting phone calls. We have inmates packing their bags, aren't they?
We've been very busy. Very busy. When the shutdown was on, we were very busy, Bruce. So a lot of families and friends and attorneys and federal public defenders calling on the First Step Act and its applicability and how it's going to be implemented.
Right. And again, folks, today's what, January 28th, 2019. The government is temporarily back on from a very long shutdown. And so you can imagine, or we know, but our listeners can imagine how slow government is already, much less grinding back to a start now that the shutdown is over. So this is a very interesting law now and has a lot of different components. So we might tackle some of those today and talk about those. Now, folks, none of this has actually happened yet. There's going to be this is going to happen. So, Jose, what's kind of the process? Walk our listeners through a little bit of the process from the CFR and on down to program statements and stuff like that. How will this actually get to reality here?
Well, as you very well said, Bruce, the First Step Act was signed into law by President Trump on December 21st, 2018. So it's already a law. It's enacted. It's in the Code of Federal Regulations and the implementations of it. It's going to be up to the Department of Justice as to the reforms that affect the Department of Justice. There are four sentencing reform provisions along with a number of reforms to how individuals are going to be treated in federal prison. So the law already has the requirements. DOJ has to establish their public policies on how it's going to be implemented by the Bureau of Prisons. So it'll probably be late summer, early fall, and who knows, next winter that this provisions are going to be into current active policy with the Bureau of Prisons.
Yeah, so it is going to take some time, folks. And I know if we have listeners that have loved ones and family in federal prison already, or we have some clients out there listening that may be headed toward federal prison, just kind of cool your jets a little bit because it is going to be a little while before this gets enacted. I think there are several elements to this, though. Basically, it is going to happen. That is the good news, right?
And you know, go ahead. Bruce, the sentencing and the compassionate release reforms that are in the law are effective right now.
Okay.
But the other parts of the bill are being phased over 3 years. And okay, we're going to explain briefly about it. So in the next 3 years, the phase of the bill that deals with not the components that are sentencing and compassionate releases, those are going to be phased out in 3 years. sentencing compassionate releases is already the law. It's already active. And some federal judges are sentencing inmates and asking that the Bureau implement the procedures of the First Step Act.
Really?
Yes.
Right there in the judgment commitment order?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Holy cow. Now, I'm asking a question. I don't know the answer to this one, but how is it that the compassionate releases can go in right now, but the other stuff can't?
Because those affect the individuals that are being released here, and are the law is applicable to them now.
Okay.
So that is,
I see,
even now and retroactive.
So there's not a special need, right? Because there is no special needs assessment for a compassionate release case or whatever. It's just there's other criteria: how much time they've done on their sentence, the level of their sickness, and what else?
The First Step Act establishes the elderly offender program, so it has already takes into provision the implementation of the elderly offender program. So it does have some guides as to how it's going to be applicable. They don't have to wait for policy for that.
Okay. So that's good to know. And we do have several, we've worked with several cases where the person had extenuating medical circumstances, and we've given advice and consultation to family members whose loved one was in a federal prison, suffering from a prolonged physical condition, and they were wanting, to see if they were eligible for compassionate release.
Right. It has strict requirements that needs to be met. If they don't meet one, they're automatically excluded. For example, I had an attorney that just called me before the show, asking me on. Had a client where the lady is in prison, has four children, and the caregiver is the oldest of the children.
Okay.
The oldest of the children is now going to college and is unable to provide care for the children. So they're asking me if the First Step Act brings the early release for the elderly. And I said, well, the caregiver has to be a partner or spouse or a significant other that provides the care. And in the cases that they cannot provide the cases, it's two strict requirements. First, death of the caregiver, or incapacitation, and verified by a doctor that the caregiver is incapacitated. So in this case, the young lady is going to college. So
is she too far out? She's not considered essential staff.
Right.
She's not close.
No, she's not there. So it's strict requirement.
Man.
It's strict application of the law. So she doesn't qualify.
Right. And even still, let's say, we and the attorney could put a package together. It would go up before the warden. The warden could technically say yes, but that doesn't mean yes, because it has to go to Washington, D.C. Is that right?
Or absolutely right. The Bureau of Prison has to request to the court that they release this inmate. The warden could send a package up. He could recommend early release for that person, but once it gets up to the court, they're going to deny it.
Right. So it is a multiple step, strict criteria to get into the program for eligibility, and then you have to write it up. Then it has to get approvals on several levels.
Yeah.
And look, people do release under compassionate release. Make no mistake about it. It happens. It doesn't happen necessarily every day, but it does happen, and it's a concerted effort. And sometimes myself working at, Butner, Carville, Cars, anyway, several medical centers, we have social work and other departments, particularly even Fort Worth, which is a low, they have a social work capacity there as well, and can assist with the compassionate release documentation as well. So, and that is something that is going to be more utilized, and I think it's going to be in the forefront because we have an elderly population and a sick population. And make no mistake about it, it's very cost prohibitive for the taxpayers. Just working in a women's medical center, the millions and millions of dollars that cost taxpayers. I mean, I just want to make sure that you're using your taxpayers' money correctly. You're being a good steward of the public trust, and some of these offenders may be able to have their healthcare needs taken care of privately or with their own insurance or benefits or what have you. And that would be a relief, I think, for the Bureau of Prisons. Anyway, so anything else on compassionate release? Or
I think we could talk about it in more in depth as we go in the program, Bruce.
You're right, but nothing for today. I think we've got a good handle on it today, from what we know. Yeah, and again, folks, this is brand spanking new stuff. I mean, this is, we have an idea of how they're going to implement it, but the timeline and some of the nuances, we just don't know yet. I think let's talk about types of inmates that qualify for some of these services. Okay, I think a lot of the people that are going to receive the most benefit from the First Step Act are nonviolent offenders. And there's going to be a risk assessment, I think, performed on every offender in the Bureau of Prisons to see where they fall in a risk continuum. But make no mistake about it, there are several types of inmates that you and I can sit here today and probably tell our audience they don't got anything coming, right, in terms of a time cut. So Jose, lay out a couple of types of charges or inmates that might be precluded from getting out early.
Well, some of the cases, obviously, violent criminal offenses are not eligible. Sex offenders are not eligible. Unfortunately, illegal non-U.S. citizens, illegal undocumented individuals, non-U.S. citizens, obviously, are some of the ones that come up to my mind real quick, Bruce. There are also a lot of terms that are interchangeable between this law, like good time credit versus earned time credit. Good time credit for U.S. citizens, good time credit for non-U.S. citizens. That's applicable to everybody. It doesn't matter who they are. The good time credit rule applies to everybody.
So let's park the bus right there for a second on the good conduct time. That's great. You know, there's one of the first things that I probably see happening once this moves forward is they're going to make that change from 47 to the full 54 days a year good conduct time, right?
Yes, and that's one of the things that during my tenure as the chief of the Bureau's Designation Computation Center, we were polled on the things that we could implement to grant some benefits or relief to inmates. And that was my first thing that I mentioned. Currently, the law says it was 54 days, but actual applicability of that law was 47 days. So inmates earn 47 days per year and a day based on the mathematical interpretation of that law. But we wanted to give them the extra 7 days, and Congress, during the old administration, the Smart on Credit Initiative, as some of you might remember, we gave some suggestions, and they consider it, and now it's the law. So that's one of the things that I leave to legacy for the Bureau of Prisons.
Oh, man, that's right. It's one of the
So everybody across the board will get the 54 days good conduct time credit. And I was informed by some of the folks that this is going to be implemented here soon. The government shutdown actually affected the implementation of this because they need to reprogram the computer bases to grant the full 54 days per year and a day of accomplishment. And this is going to be retroactive. It should be coming out as soon as they revamp the formulas for the computers, and everybody will get that benefit. But it's slow in coming into effect.
Right. But let's be sure, on moving from 47 to 54 days a year, good conduct time is going to be available to every inmate, violent, nonviolent, sex offender, gun case, you name it, right? Everybody, alien or undocumented individual.
Right. Undocumented individuals or non-U.S. citizens.
Non-U.S. citizens, yes.
And so right. Only the additional 7 days per year of good conduct time will be applied retroactively.
Okay.
They will be applied retroactively and prospectively for anybody coming into sentencing once they, and I want to make this clear, once the Bureau of Prisons reestablishes and reprograms the computer to grant the full effect of the First Step Act of the 54 days per year and a day served.
Man, you know, do you see? Okay, so here's what I see what happened with that. You're going to have a lot of immediate releases, and they're just going to have to go by a projected release date and work their way back.
Absolutely. And then it gets complicated, Bruce. It gets dicey because if there's individuals that are already confined, inmates that are serving their time who had good conduct time taken away because of disciplinary acts and things like that, it's going to be an individual one-on-one basis where they're going to have to go back and see if this applies to them or not. How much benefit will they get? If they took the 47 days completely, that individual only gets 7 days. So this gets really, really technical and it gets boggled down. So it would mean that prisoners who have not lost good time credit during their sentences will earn an additional 7 days for each year of the sentence imposed during which they earned the 47 days of good time. So.
But you guys can run things, and I mean not you guys, but them guys can run things. Like we're still there.
Not me anymore.
We're still there. I'm still there in my mind. What am I doing right now? Anyway, won't they be able to look at the DHL sanctions and see what
the
good content?
They will. I'm gonna make it real simple. For example, a person serving a 10-year sentence who has earned all possible good time would receive an extra 70 days of good time credit under the First Step Act. We do not know, and the act doesn't say this, Bruce, how BOP will award good time for the credit retroactively if a person has lost for reason of infractions,
right.
Disciplinary conduct, disciplinary issues, lost some or all of the good time credits for violations of Bureau policy.
So
we don't know how the Bureau is going to implement that yet. There has to be some policy, obviously. This is very complicated. The Bureau has over 180,000 inmates. So we'll stay tuned and we'll see how this is going to be implemented.
But if you have any questions about this, give us a call and we can sit here and talk to you in detail and maybe figure out a pretty good estimate, depending on your loved one's situation or the person's situation, everybody's situation. Like he's saying, as Jose's saying, is a little bit different. Particularly if there was a conduct issue or what have you. Okay. So that's the good conduct time piece of it. So again, 47 to 54 days a year, that's good. But that's going to cause some issues because now all these immediate releases and short term, there'll be some short term things happening and they'll have to work their way back and then finally catch up to the system. So folks got to be patient with that. Now, the other provision here in the First Step Act, something called earned time credits. And man, Jose, people are packing their bags, right? I'm going to take a class. I'm going to rack up some certificates. And I'm going to get 1, 2, 3, 4 years off my sentence because I'm going to take every earned time credit opportunity that avails me. But watch out. The earned time credit isn't necessarily what you think, right? So I'll let Jose kind of, or you want me to tell, get burst their bubble what that really means?
It's one of those events and one of those features that is created by the First Step Act, which is kind of leads to some confusion that we already had many calls, good conduct time, earned time credit used interchangeably, and it's not. It doesn't mean the same thing, and you cannot use it interchangeably, Bruce. Some individuals can earn time credits by completing programs, reentry programs inside prison walls, and engaging in what the First Step Act calls productive activities. So like helping other inmates, mentor them or be tutors for them, teachers, for lack of a better words, to deliver program to other inmates. It depends on the person's risk level. There's going to be a risk assessment that's going to be completed by the Bureau of Prisons. And depending on the risk level, they can earn up to 15 days of credit for every 30 days of programming or productive activities.
Oh, wow. Okay. So, now, that's really interesting. I wonder if there's going to be, what if you have like a 15-year sentence, man. I mean, you could really rack some stuff up. I guess it's going to cap off at some point or
Well, I don't know, and the law doesn't say clearly if this is going to be applied retroactively. So we got to stay tuned. But these time credits, the earned time credits, can be redeemed by some individuals for early transfer into a halfway house. It doesn't mean early release. Early transfer to a halfway house. You, instead of going 6 months, you might get 8 months, 9 months, depending. Earlier to release to a residential reentry center, typically known as halfway houses.
Okay, so let's just pause right there because so many people, man, they're calling me, they're calling you. Hey, man, okay, so I'm going to get the 54 days, plus I'm going to probably earn about such and such earned time credit. And man, these people are, man, they're in fantasy land. So what you're saying is, and I'm not saying that to be mean or anything, it's just facts, right? So the earned time credit, they're not going to modify the person's prison sentence. The only thing they're going to really get, they're going to serve their BOP sentence, but they're just going to serve it in the community more so.
Right, right. And that's why we paused. I put the brakes, and folks need to put the brakes and understand that these time credits can only be redeemed by some individuals, by some inmates, for early transfer into RRC, Residential Reentry Centers, home confinement, or supervised release. Mm-hmm. So that's it. Those three, RRC, Residential Reentry Centers, RRC, home confinement, or supervised release. That's it. It's not getting early out of the prison walls to go home. Right.
Interesting, because supervised release would be probation. That's another branch of government.
Right, right. And that needs to be worked out.
No kidding.
Between the RRC folks, Bureau of Prison, RRC, and U.S. probation. So it's a whole holistic approach to going out to a halfway house. Now, I want to make it clear that earned time credits do not reduce a prisoner's sentence. That's the key buzzword here. Good conduct time does modify and reduces a prisoner's sentence, but earned time credits do not.
Right. Exactly. So let's kind of park the bus again. Okay, so here we have it. So these earned time credits can be applied and probably more than likely going to be applied toward earning more halfway house time or RRC time. You heard Jose say moments ago about the word home confinement. Listen, home confinement is run by the RRC. Home confinement is not a separate entity. Home confinement is not an entity that's run purely by the BOP. It's run through the residential reentry center. Okay. So I think people need to know that, I'm going to get automatically home confinement. Or there's a date, right, that they can qualify for a home confinement, but it doesn't mean they're going to get home confinement.
And you're right on point, Bruce. The issue here is that inmates want to go home confinement, electronic monitoring, right straight from the jail walls. That's not going to happen. They go through a residential reentry center first. The residential reentry center staff work in conjunction with the U.S. probation, where he is going to be supervised to determine the conditions of home confinement, electronic monitoring, if that individual could pay for electronic monitoring, that individual has the setup for electronic monitoring
or
home confinement, and then they will go to home confinement once approved by U.S. probation. But it's a two-prong effect. First, RRC establishes it in conjunction with the second part, which is U.S. probation, who's going to implement that electronic monitoring.
Okay. Now, let me add that. Let me add a tweak to that, okay? Inmates going through prison, inmates getting ready to release to the halfway house, they're about ready to do the packet. Federal probation will go to the inmate's house, right, or have some contact before they go to the RRC to verify the release residence sometimes, right?
Absolutely. Not only that, Bruce, if they have a job lined up, they'll go and see where they work to see if it's in the commuting area, because they have to have a range to establish electronic monitoring, which is by electronic bracelet.
Now, back in the day, electronic monitoring was run by USPO and we did home confinement. But I'm just saying, here we go. I'm gonna add a new. So the inmates in prison,
yes,
He's going to try to qualify for RRC halfway house. Probation's contacted. Probation will do a home inspection of the inmate. So I get all these phone calls all the time saying, oh, probation just came to my house, and that means we're going to get home confinement. No, it doesn't. Here's what it means. It means you're going to go to the RRC. And then the person has to then go to the RRC halfway house. And then they got to go through the A&O admission orientation procedure. Now, God forbid how long that takes. It varies place by place. And when they are in the A&O phase of their halfway house, that is when the person needs to talk to the case manager or whomever about getting on home confinement. Now, watch this. So there's a little bit of paperwork about home confinement. Guess what happens next? Another inspection is taking place by the RRC staff. So that inspection is absolutely clutch, because the RRC staff have to then go to the offender's home, do another inspection, make sure things are legit, and then come back, give it the go-ahead, then outfit them with the monitoring devices, etc. And now the person is on quote home confinement. So it's a very complex mixed procedure.
And another thing that complicated is the first step that requires that this folks that have earned time credits get additional time in halfway houses or in home confinement, as you very well say, Bruce. But U.S. probation are in some places doesn't have the human resources to get to monitor those individuals. So they'll have to spend a little bit more time in a halfway house versus electronic monitoring or home confinement. You see, because this the First Step Act has a domino effect now, Bruce.
Yeah.
Some of these jurisdictions, some of these districts, U.S. probation offices are small and don't have the resource. Actually, a lot of those folks were furloughed. So now they're coming back into it. And so coming back to work. And so their workload is just absolutely nobody was doing that job they were doing. So
yeah, because if you're in federal probation now, just think about this. So you're in federal probation, you're going to inherit these guys and gals that are coming out of a federal halfway house. You're going to see the halfway house now double stack these people, right? They're going to get 2-for-1 beds on this. In other words, one guy, I'm just going to say guy because 93% of the inmates are guys, so just work with me. So one guy's in a bed and one guy's on home confinement, so they can get 2-for-1 beds, right? So it's an incentive because the halfway house is getting paid for the person, the same mandate rate for the person who's on home confinement. So, and now, ineffectively, the probation caseload is now doubled. You know what I mean? Possibly, not doubled, but certainly increased exponentially, because now there really is going to be a push. You're going to see residential reentry managers and regional people have probably force quotas of 30, 33, 40% on home confinement, running rosters, you know, making sure.
Everybody's workload is going to be impacted, Bruce. It's going to increase. There's no doubt about it. This is a mandate of the First Step Act that the folks that get the earned time credit and they're approved for it are going to get additional halfway house, going to get additional home confinement or supervised release, which means the caseloads for U.S. probation folks, the caseload for the RRC folks, it's going to double, triple, who knows? But it will. They definitely will be impacted and receive an additional few cases.
Well, I'm glad we're talking about that. So, yeah, the home confinement now, and again, that's just going to be for your lower risk inmates. Again, now, sex offenders and violent folks will get RRC placement. Make no mistake about it. They'll get an appropriate RRC placement. They just won't be able to receive benefited
earned time credit.
Yeah, earned time credit for that. So,
and it's very limited because some jurisdictions don't have RRCs that sex offenders could be handled.
Right.
Actually, some states have legislated that they won't have them.
Right.
Sex offenders out there. But one last thing that I want to mention about good time credits, Bruce, is that the law hasn't changed as to incarcerated individuals who are serving a life sentence. Those individuals are ineligible for good time credits. Life sentences will not earn good kind of time because obviously they were sentenced to life.
Yeah,
and that doesn't change in the First Step Act. The law doesn't change nothing as regarding to life sentences.
Yeah. I remember I was doing a pre-release at Three Rivers and for RRC placement. These were a bunch of RDAP graduates at Three Rivers, right? And we had this big kind of town hall meeting. And these dudes lined up. And I guess, I don't know, this is back in the day, obviously. But I had like I had a call out sheet, all that stuff. And these guys wanting to wave, like, hey, Mr. Cameron, can we wave your meeting? I'm like, what's going on? I looked down, man, they had life sentences. You know what I mean?
Rivers is one of those famous, kind of the high. Yeah. High mediums.
The high medium,
man. Medium security facility, but they have high security inmates there that have earned their way to a medium security facility, but life sentences, they're never going to go come out.
That's a little bit sobering for me, man. I thought I was in a medium, you know, I was chilling, you know, like, oh, man, let's take a look at your release date. Life. Oh, yeah, you could, I'll waive it. You go back to the chat hall, man, just don't get in trouble. But holy cow, man, that's some stuff right there. So yeah, obviously the people with life sentences and whatnot are precluded from these benefits. Obviously folks that are not U.S. citizens, we'll save that for another day, that whole discussion, but rights, certainly non-U.S. citizens they'll be precluded from the benefits. Non-U.S. citizens can't receive a early release from RDAP under 3621E, and there's several other things that they can't do because of their status as a non-citizen. So again, the First Step Act is primarily for U.S. citizens. And I can't see that because my glasses aren't on, but you were pointing to something very important. What was happening?
It's one of the things is when can people redeem earned time credits for transfer to a RRC or to supervised release or home confinement? You know, earned time credits can only be redeemed when an inmate has earned time credit that's equal to or greater than the remainder of their imposed term of incarceration.
Okay, so say that again.
Okay, I'm going to say it one more time, and I don't know if I can say it in the same way.
Good. That was nice.
But earned time credits can only be redeemed when an inmate has earned time credit and has a balance equal to or greater than
the remainder
of their imposed term of imprisonment.
Their imposed term. Okay, got it.
Right.
All right, that's interesting.
The sentence, basically the sentence. They can't,
right?
When they have a time or earned time credits balance equal to or greater than the remainder of their sentence.
Okay, so man, you know, obviously, man, you're not gonna want to miss team now if you're an inmate. You don't want to waive team anymore, man. You want to make sure you got what you got coming, make sure everything's going good, and wait for that. It's almost like you're looking for another computation sheet of when you can start redeeming certain programs and stuff.
You know, in my 26 and a half years in the Federal Bureau of Prison, Bruce, that's one of the things that the Bureau of Prison does very well. They have good quality programs that have meaningful programs for inmates to engage in productive activities. So reentry programs are nothing new with the First Step Act. It's something that the Bureau does well. The Bureau of Prisons has always had good programs for inmates. And actually, I would even dare to say that 95% of inmates, or maybe even more, 95% is conservative to me, they do engage in productive programming in the Bureau of Prisons. They like the programs, they participate in the programs, and they really have good program participation in the majority of the prison. You have some prisons as you go up in security that obviously by the sentences, those inmates serving life and things like that, they don't engage as much as inmates that could benefit from the program. But those higher sentences, even life sentence inmates, take their time and occupy themselves and keep their minds occupied because they're going to live there. And they have already been through a lot in the prison system, and they might as well get into the productive program.
I'm going to put on my little Fox Sports hat on. You know, there's going to be some interesting things about that to make sure that there is a solid core and a solid curriculum of services for these people to engage in. Hey, make no mistake about it. I guarantee you some of these white collar guys at satellite camps and all they're doing is going in through the rear gate and servicing and doing plumbing and yard work, man, versus a Montgomery or a freestanding camp. Some of those satellite camps, man, there's not much going on, bro. I mean, they're just sitting there. I mean, I'm not trying to bag on anybody right now. I'm just saying I'm hoping that every institution has a core because there are differences even at the camp level, right, of programming.
They are, and you said it very well, Bruce. A lot of those camps, the satellite camps, either have the RDAP programs, the Residential Drug Abuse Program, but most of the satellite camps are work camps.
Work.
You work and you work. You maintain the grounds of the
institution. But you know what? You'll be able to get some work credit points for sure.
Some work credit points. That's productive activity.
That's very productive
activity. Oh yeah, absolutely. Because the satellite camps were built to support the main institution adjacent to that camp. So they cut the grounds, they maintain the warehouses, and it's a productive activity. It's a job.
You know what, folks? I might want to reverse what I said. Maybe it'll be a better deal going to a work camp because you'll amass more working credits than if we were sitting trying to fight for programming at a Montgomery or one of those big box camps. But anyway, man, we'll see how this unfolds. I'm just kind of speculating, you know, how what some of the challenges are laying before and my specialty was for the last 13 years was the back end of the sentence in terms of RRC, RDAP, time cut, Second Chance Act, those things. And so I finished my career really focusing in on the back end of an offender's life in the Federal Bureau of Prisons. And that's why this is such a good time for both of us, man. I mean, you're all the way through front, middle, and back, and I'm more on the back side of this because that's what it's all about, right? It's about getting out of prison, and we're here to help our clients traverse that journey of prison. So man, I mean, is this a great time to be in the business or what?
It is. It is exciting times, and actually, it is a lot of good things that are happening with the First Step Act. I think is in the right direction. It's not it's a comprehensive overhaul of the system, but there's still more to come. There could be more things done for this, Bruce. But let me continue. In
sure.
order, what happens once you earn the time credit and you want to redeem it? So in order to earn time credits for transfer of an inmate, the inmate must be assessed as a low or minimum risk offender for two consecutive reviews.
Yeah, team reviews.
Risk assessment.
Okay.
For two consecutive risk assessments, or have a petition for transfer approved by the warden after the warden determines the prisoner will not be a risk to the public safety and is unlikely to recidivate. So it has things that go hand in hand. You don't only program, you have to earn the time credit, you have to be twice a lower minimum and assessed twice as a low risk and then submitted by the warden and the warden approving saying that you are unlikely to recidivate. So,
and then I guess there's going to be somebody in the DSCC that reviews that packet and then we'll make a final determination, right?
Absolutely. The Bureau of Prisons, the Designation Sense Computation Center is the last component. When I was the chief there, I used to joke with a former director, Charles Samuels. I used to tell him, boss, I hate to compare myself like that, but it starts with us and it ends with us because we did the initial assessment for designation and then we did the final computation and release audit and then they got their projected release date. So I used to joke with him. I used to tell him, Mr. Samuels, we're the Alpha and the Omega. It starts with us and ends with us. So the same thing here with the First Step Act. The First Step Act will require that the DSCC, the Designation Sense Computation Center, does an assessment, a risk assessment, to determine if they finally approve that inmate to go to a lower security level.
Man, it's going to be interesting, too. You're going to see a lot of administrative remedies and stuff complaining about their results on the risk assessment. You know, people thinking that they're low when they're not and this and that. That's going to be fun. Man, also for institution legal staff and regional legal staff, I mean, I'm just thinking outside the box right now because it hadn't happened. But, you know, I would want psychology services and an attorney to sign off on the final review of the risk assessment, saying, no, this is it. This is what it is. You know what I mean? And making sure that all the way up the chain that you had multiple eyes on this thing. Now, the risk assessment is going to be released to the public. I mean, Trump has written that into the law that at some point this risk assessment will be made public, which is good, right? Because then we can all see it's an open, I won't say open book test, but we'll see what it is and we'll see what the static and dynamic risk factors that they're going to use. I'm sure it's going to be a good measure because there's just awesome, awesome risk measures out there for sex offenders. I can only imagine how much easier it might be for not only just general criminal offenders, you know, honestly, to be honest with you. So that's going to be exciting to see. But man, that's just gonna, you know, like it's gonna be a whole lot of work for a lot of for the staff.
It's a whole lot of work from everywhere, Bruce, because believe it or not, this shutdown has a direct effect on the application and the implementation of the First Step Act. The First Step Act established that this for the good conduct time to go into effect was immediately, but the law says it gives 7 months to the Department of Justice to implement the risk assessment and everything else. So I had some conversation with some BOP executives, and they were telling me that it's going to have an effect because DOJ will have to give out the guidance to implement by the Bureau of Prisons. So 7 months, I don't think it's going to, you know, you count 7 months from now.
Right.
And it's going to take a longer time than that, I anticipate.
Yeah. Now we got about 10 more minutes left, and I want to cover one more thing about initial designations and transfers. So let's, you know, some things will change, some things won't change. Okay. So we get a lot of calls about designations and transfers, and is somebody eligible for a transfer? When can they transfer? You know, Jose, you know, a lot of offenders with maybe a longer sentence might be designated initially wherever there's a bed, and it might be close to 500 plus or so miles away, not all the time, and then they'll get the offender back closer to home toward the end of their bit. What are some of the things that you, or if anything, changing with designations and transfers with this new First Step Act?
Well, you know, like I mentioned before, the First Step Act doesn't change a lot of things on programming. Programming existed before this First Step Act. It's how it's going to apply, how they're going to be implemented, what kind of benefit the inmate is going to get. As to the BOP's initial designation and transfers, I could say from where I sat in my chair as the chief of the designation, and I'm not speaking for the Bureau of Prison because I cannot. I think the Bureau of Prisons did a great job on trying to balance the recommendations of the judges and the implementation of the population management of the Bureau of Prisons, trying to designate an inmate according to their security level. I think the Bureau did a decent job, a very good job in trying to place inmates according to their programming needs, their medical and mental health needs, and trying to balance out security. So the First Step Act is not going to change much of that. I think the First Step Act incorporated that 500-mile driving rule, but the Bureau had that before. We had that, and it's not the law. It's a policy that we had.
Ordinarily,
we try to place inmates within five weeks. The Bureau, I can't say we anymore. Right. It's the Bureau of Prisons. The Bureau of Prisons tries to place inmates as close as possible to their release residence. However, there are numerous factors that impact that general rule and that philosophy. As you know, Bruce, I was a trainer. I was a designator. I was an administrator, a programs administrator. I was an associate warden. And I tell you, in all my roles in the Bureau of Prisons, I was a case manager. I had a great time doing a case manager job, unit manager job. So I saw that the Bureau, as we implemented the policy back then, did a very, very good job in placing inmates as close to their release residence. And then we transfer them. If they couldn't meet because they were high security, then we transferred them and they got to lower their points, score down to the custody classification and security classification to a medium, we'll try to place them closer. The same thing, medium to low, low to minimum, or initial designation right off the bat when the judge's sentence and the gavel hits and the inmate is designated, we try to place them close to home. A lot of complications go into that because back in 2011, 2012, it spiked. The population went up from 200 to almost 220,000. And the Bureau was very, very crowded, especially at the high security levels and the mediums. And then we had a hard time trying to place inmates where they belong. We just send them where there was bed space. Now then, back in 2015, with the crack cocaine implementation, we released almost 16,000 inmates. And we had a little relief on our population. So now the population kind of ceded, the population pressures came down, and we had a better angle to manage and transfer the folks. But the 500-mile radius rule. It's applicable, and now it's 250 miles. So they're trying to put them in within 250 miles as close as possible, but they're still overcrowding in the Bureau of Prisons. So right now, the philosophy of some of the administrators, when I left, it was put them where there's bed. Place them where we have a bed. And so that 500-mile rule at initial designation didn't apply because there was still a little bit of that crowding, and we placed inmates a little bit further away, displaced from where they were going to release. But I assure you, the Bureau continued to place and transfer those inmates as soon as they were eligible to transfer closer to home. And that's still the philosophy of the Bureau of Prisons.
It is. But I'm looking at the Western region right now. Okay. I'm looking at the Western region right now. And the Western region is Wyoming, Montana, Idaho, Washington, Oregon, Nevada, California, and Arizona. Now, there's a whole lot of inmates out there that they got. There's no facility in Montana, no facility in Wyoming, nothing in Idaho, nothing. Well, let's see what we got there. Nothing in Utah. And so, you know, and even in, look, I mean, yeah, just. So anyway, that 250, you might as well mail it in. That's just a guideline. It's a suggested guideline. Is that going to happen for some of these people?
For some of them, that doesn't happen. Not only because of geographical locations, but it's impacted by security threat groups for the gangs,
right?
Disruptive group, which are the traditional five that the Bureau monitors, and so also care levels. Hmm. First and foremost, the care of an inmate.
Medical care.
There you go. Medical and mental health care is also taken into account. Top priority is given and taken into account in the classification system in order to play that inmate, take care of their medical or mental health needs.
So care level is going to trump the mile radius, sure.
Definitely.
All right. Y'all need to listen to that. They're going to be our customers or something like that. Care level will trump. No pun intended. We'll always go over the mile restriction.
We'll override anything, even including. I dare to say this, as that was my philosophy, security. Mm. The care of an inmate is first. Security and care go hand in hand, but many of the medical centers for the Bureau of Prisons are administrative facilities, which in administrative facility, we tend to handle an inmate at the highest level of security.
Right. Good point. Yeah, I was at Butner. It was Carswell. Yeah, Carswell. Yep. You know, now, Carville. Mm-hmm. No, it was all minimum out or community out. But yeah, all the ladies at Carswell with the admin max there and everything there. So you're right. Some of these medical facilities can step up, but their care level is going to have to necessitate them being in a medical facility. But the BOP does have those facilities. The BOP will provide for the medical care. The BOP does have a sufficient formulary. You know, I work with inmates all the time about, you know, med adjustments and stuff like that, and what's on the formulary and what's kind of equivalent to what they're taking, and with their eyeglasses and all this and that for diabetes management. Look, I'm not a nurse by any means, but, you know, I was in the health services area myself there as a kind of an AW-ish person there at Carville, whatever. So anyway, but we only have a few minutes left. We did cover a lot of the topics referenced in the First Step Act. And, you know, folks, you know, you can reach us and reach Jose. It's federalprisonauthority.com, federalprisonauthority.com. And every article and every link on federalprisonauthority.com has meaningful information as well as contact information that'll get to myself and Mr. Santana. The email, of course, is federalprisonauthorybop@gmail.com. And then there's a special phone number folks can call or text as well that they can get their questions answered in a very timely manner by myself and Mr. Santana. So, well, Jose, I really want to thank you for coming on the show today. You know, your expertise and, you know, just passion for what you're doing and your knowledge. And, you know, both of us, I can speak for both of us. I think we love working with families and attorneys. We love to train people. Hey, and be honest with you, I mean, I miss working with inmates. You know, it's a little bit different when you're out there in the yard or whatever, but, you know, we get some challenges sometimes.
It's a challenge, but it's rewarding when you get to know and see inmates. Yeah. And then I found myself finding some of these inmates outside.
I said, hey, Mr. Sanjay, remember me? I said,
I sure do. And some of these guys have adjusted and adapted and became law-abiding citizens.
So that's great.
It's rewarding to see that.
And that's our job and was our job, and we get to do it again, but in a private capacity. So we're glad to do that. Well, folks, that's another wrap here for the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. Bruce Cameron, Justin will be back with us next week on the program. We'll have something exciting for you again, as we always do. We always deliver on this program. Feel free to see our Facebook page, Concierge Coaches Show on Facebook. We are on Instagram as The Concierge Coaches Show, and on LinkedIn as The Concierge Coaches. So we're around, so feel free to ping us on our social media. I'm at my site's conciergecoach.net. So again, we'll bid everybody a great afternoon. We'll see you here next time on LA Talk Radio on The Concierge Coaches Show. Take care, everybody.
You're listening to The Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.